As formal as it gets, congratulations, Eric Gunnison, inductee to the Colorado Music Hall of Fame.
Well, thank you so much. I'm truly honored and humbled. It's amazing.
You have made quite a name as an accompanist. Mm-hmm. Is it funny, interesting that you have become great, making other people sound very good?
I'm proud to, you know, be known that way. Really, I am, because it's a whole different thing being an accompanist, you know, in terms of what you do behind somebody, as opposed to what you would do if you're playing your own music and everything. And I really pride myself on being able to do that well. And it's paid off for me, you know. Spent 5 years playing for Carmen McRae, who's still, in my estimation, one of the great jazz singers of all time. And, you know, many others, notably Roberta Gamberini, who I still work with every now and then. And a number of great people around town. Ellen Rucker, who's a fellow Colorado Music Hall of Fame inductee. I produced a record for her called Thoughts of You and arranged for her and played on that record with her.
There was a documentary called Piano Players Rarely Ever Play Together because, you know, there's usually one piano in the room.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So you never get to sit down with another piano player unless you're at, you know, you double up on the keyboard like
dual style.
Yeah, Chico Marx and Harpo.
Well, you know, actually, we've done a couple of things around Denver through the years. We used to have this band, The Three Keys, when Jeff Jenkins was still here and Pat Bianchi. So we did, like, Pat would be on the B3, I'd be on Fender Rhodes or piano, and Jeff would be on piano and Fender Rhodes, and Paul Romain on drums. So we did that a couple of times, and then that occasionally Art Landy would join us, which was, you know, wonderful. Art would play the piano, Jeff would play B3, I'd play Rhodes or something like that. And most recently, Greg Gisbert's new band that we did with Steve Wilson down at Dazzle. Me and Tom Amend were playing together. Tom was playing B3 and I was playing the acoustic piano, and Paul Romain on drums.
Abby was going to ask about the education twist. You mentioned Tom Amend. That's not a bad protege. He's coming along.
I think he's got it together. No, Tom is a fantastic musician. I just heard his newest recording. Fantastic. With his octet, you know, really sounds great. Great writing. So he's going to be one of the guys, you know?
Yeah, even though maybe you're not in the classroom anymore at DU Lamont School of Music, I'm sure as jazz lends itself to that mentorship, you're still, you know, showing some of the younger cats along the way. I would love to hear some thoughts on the music scene, because although you've done some national touring and I've been here for only 3 years, I'm like in the music scene of Denver now, but you've been in it since the 80s here, seeing the evolution, the growth. Can you share a little bit about the local music scene, even some of your mentorships along the way?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Well, I actually arrived here in 1980. Wow, I can't believe I'm saying that. But Denver was already a noted music town because of course, Five Points and the history behind, you know, the Russonian and all the big bands that would come through there. This is a place where Elvin Jones joined the John Coltrane Quartet, you know, back in the 60s. I mean, so there was a rich legacy here already. And there were also some great musicians who became my mentors, notably Paul Warburton, great bass player, who played, you know, with, amongst others, Bill Evans trio with Philly Joe Jones and many others, Chet Baker, Stan Getz. He was probably my first and most important mentor. Mm. And I also met Ellen through Paul because he was playing with her trio at Sims Landing. And then as, you know, I hung around more, I got to meet all the great musicians who kind of came through here, great drummers like Bruno Carr, Nat Yarbrough, you know, many others, John Arcata, and I started playing at the Chapultepec, and that's where, you know, I played quite a bit there during those years, the 80s and the 90s. We had a nice band with Billy Tolles back in those days, back in the probably early 90s, I think it was, with Ken Walker on bass and Paul Romain on drums, and There's kind of a recording from that called Chipolta Set that we've put out that I understand has gained a fair amount of currency amongst some of the younger players in town. So that's, but this the scene has just evolved. There was places to play definitely in those days, and Chapultepec mainly, and some other places, Vartan's Jazz Club back when he was in town. But it's evolved so much since then. I mean, and we've got so many great young musicians. Wow. I mean, that probably goes along with, the expansion of the education thing in jazz in here in Denver and in Colorado. You've got several great programs going on now. C. Boulder, you've got DU, you've got Metro, UC Denver, Greeley, of course, at Colorado State, also in Fort Collins. Great programs everywhere, and I think it's really paid off because we've got so many great players. And notably, I mean, I think the venues have increased as well. We've got two full-time jazz venues, Dazzle and Nocturne, great venues like the Muse. Now there's Full Cycle up in Boulder, and there's other places, of course, but we have so many really full-time places where we can play this music. That's incredible, and we've got great young players who are carrying on the tradition and doing great new things. So it's really cool to see the whole scene evolve, and it never dies. It keeps going. Venues change, but the interest in the music to me never wanes. There's always somebody new coming along, pushing it and pushing the boundaries and saying, here's my take on it. Great new composers. I mean, you think of, like Annie Booth, what she's done, Camila Vitaitis, one of my ex-students, she's writing. And I mentioned Tom's writing, and some of the big bands going on around town. So great writers, great players. I'm really ecstatic about the state of the scene. It's really very cool.
I'm wondering if the theory about 10,000 hours is probably helped along by the venues and the classroom and the jam sessions. We were talking earlier, Abby, about you just have to, in writing, you just have to write and write and write and write to get better at it. So Denver is probably becoming a place where, you can get 3 nights or, find a hotel lobby, or those 3, 4, 5 hour gigs add up over time.
They do. Yeah, I really believe in that. I read Malcolm Gladwell's book where he espouses that theory, the 10,000 hours, to really master things. And I think it's very important to just be immersed in the scene. And there is a scene here. That's the cool thing. And I know there's lots of people rehearsing music, writing new music, and getting the chance to play it. I mean, I think there's more venues here, for a city the size of Denver than there are in, some much bigger cities. And you can still, well, it's not as affordable as it used to be. That's changed. That's definitely changed, but people still seem to be able to do it, and they're writing and playing, and I think they're immersing themselves in the music, and it's paying off, definitely.
I'm on a show with Andy O called Influenced, and we do this cross-genre work, and we land on a lot of fusion, which I was excited to learn that you have a special place in your heart. Your background in music is interesting to me because you are classically trained, you're doing jazz, you love fusion. Yeah, I just wanted to kind of dig into, how what you worked on changed over the years, or was it clear the direction at all points? Because you can do so many different things.
Well, I early on, I heard Miles Davis when I was like, probably 8 years old. My folks had the Miles Davis record, and it was on in the house. And that era was, it was like Miles and Coltrane. And where I really got into this music was the era where Miles kind of was pushing the new genre called fusion with records like In a Silent Way and Bitches Brew, which were two amazing records, still are to me, and so that's where I jumped onto the what I call the jazz train. Everybody jumps on at a different point, but that was where I jumped on, and people like Herbie Hancock, Chick Corea, Keith Jarrett, McCoy Tyner, those were the piano players that I was immediately impressed by. And they were transitioning also, you know, Chick and Herbie especially, to electric keyboards and synthesizers. So that's where I jumped on everything. That I still love that music. I love Weather Report. Joe Zawinul, to me, one of the great innovators of the music. Joe Zawinul paired with Wayne Shorter. But then you see, learn about this music, and then you say, well, okay, this guy Wayne Shorter, he played with Miles Davis too. But he also played with Art Blakey. Who's this Art Blakey guy, you know? And my dad took me to see Art Blakey when I was 10 years old, and I saw the band with Keith Jarrett and Chuck Mangione. Keith Jarrett was 20 years old, and I didn't know who he was, but I heard his playing, and I said, that is something that sounds great to me. You know, and I wasn't much of a piano player then. I was, you know, I took piano lessons, but I heard that music, and I went, that was with Art Blakey. So I was getting all these influences and still loved the fusion. But then that said, you know, said to me, well, okay, who's this Herbie Hancock guy? He played with Miles and he also played with Donald Byrd, you know, and what's his story? And then McCoy Tyner, okay, he played with Train, but he also played with Benny Golson and Art Farmer, you know, and Sonny Stitt. And I'm just going, who are these people? So you learn the history, and that's, you know, been my path forward. I started there, but then, I mean, one of the first gigs I think I got when I got to town here was with Rare Silk, a four-piece vocal group, a wonderful group. You know, they were Grammy nominated. We had records out. We toured. Tremendous band. And so I had studied the music, so I knew. One thing I liked about all the fusion players was their rich sense of the tradition. They weren't just playing one chord vamps because they could, you know, it's because they were trading on their previous experiences. Joe Zawinul playing with Cannonball Adderley for, you know, like 10 years. Herbie playing with Miles, you know, McCoy playing with Train, Keith Jarrett playing with Charles Lloyd, Art Blakey. They all had this tradition, you know, and to me, that was part of what I was supposed to be doing. I was supposed to be, yeah, I could play fusion, but I could also play bebop. I could play straight ahead. I could accompany a singer if I needed to. So I pride myself on being able to do a number of things. So I, you know, honed all my skills, you know, and that's kind of how it's panned out. You know, I started playing with Rare Silk and working around town with various singers, but also instrumentalists. And then I got the gig with Carmen McRae, and that led to a gig with the, you know, later on with the Dizzy Gillespie Big Band. And also most of the things I've done with Roberta Gamberini, you know, through the years, and working with, you know, various big bands in Europe and all kinds of things around the world. That's where I started, but, you know, to me, it just opened up everything else.
Okay, I'm taking notes here. Now we have the secret. It's so integrated. You've pulled together a style, and as you begin to play, and then, you know, somebody says, all right, take 24, or go for a while. And you begin to hear all those things come out. They're buried in there, and you've made them yours. But now that I'm thinking back, I'm hearing some of those names that you mentioned buried in the stuff that you play, the approach that you take to your solos. And I'm like, oh, there it is. Now I know.
It's all influenced me, you know, through the years, you know. And I got to mention, you know, like Ron Miles. I was introduced to Ron, you know, and we started playing together probably early 90s, you know, and I played quite a bit with him for a while there. That was a totally different experience for me because Ron was coming from a little different set, you know, kind of like maybe Ornette, you know, Coleman and people like that. And I had had some experience with some of that music previously, but playing with Ron was a big, you know, turning point for me, trying to figure out how to play his music. You're presented with these opportunities throughout your career. Sometimes you find yourself in situations where you go, I have no idea what I'm going to do. Like, I remember my first night on stage with Carmen McRae was at the Blue Note in New York. And that was my first gig with her. And I was sitting there kind of, you know, I knew I could play, but it was like I was playing with, you know, one of the world's great jazz singers, sold out house. And I'm sitting there going, wow, how do I deal with this? You know, and it was like a trial by fire. That same week, I recorded a record with her, Any Old Time, that's the name of the record. And at the end of the week, I went to Europe with her, with Ray Brown, Mickey Roker, Milt Jackson, and Stanley Turrentine was on a couple of dates in Europe. So, you know, and then I found myself on stage with those guys, and I'm going, holy smokes, man, what am I doing here? How do I do this? You know? So, I mean, it's constantly you're put in situations and it's like you adapt and you bring all your skills to bear and, you know, you try and adjust. And fortunately, I've been able to do that in a number of situations.
Our host, Andy O, that you mentioned, you know, he does the Sunday Night Poetry and Jazz show. He does a show around Easter called The Guitar Pool, and he gets all his guitar player folks on and talks about the gear. He wants to know about their pedal board and sure. their strings. So we're going to ask Eric Gunnison about his gear. What do you roll with in addition to the piano that they give you when you sit down at a place? What gear do you pull along with you in terms of electronics or little extras?
Well, I mean, it's always kind of evolving, depending on how much I can carry. You know, I mean, I've been in that game since it started. I mean, I had one of the first DX7 synthesizers, Yamaha, back in early 80s, because gigs required all these different keyboards. I've got about 20 keyboards sitting in my house or in my garage. I got two Fender Rhodes, which I don't carry anymore because they're too damn heavy. I used to carry a Fender Rhodes to gigs. I played with Jerry Bergonzi in Boston in his quartet, Cone Brio, and I would take a Fender Rhodes to the gig in one of those checker cabs. Remember the checker cabs? New York and Boston, back in the day, they had a huge back seat and a floor in the back. So I put the Rhodes on the floor, put a Fender Twin Reverb guitar amp on the seat next to me, and I'd go to gigs. You know, Michael's Pub and the 1369 Club in Boston and play with Jerry Bergonzi. Another gig where I was getting my butt kicked nightly, if you know who Jerry Bergonzi is, he's just this unreal tenor player in Boston, you know, great legendary teacher and player. But he would, you know, he'd take a solo and then, you know, it was my turn to solo, you know, and I'm going, what do I do now? You know, all these moments of what do you do now? You know, but you dig in. So, but that was my rig in those days. And then with Rare Silk, I was carrying around, I forget what I had, you know, the latest iteration with DX7 and some Korg keyboards. And I have, you know, I'm sitting in my little home studio here where I have a rack of all kinds of gear and a couple of keyboards. So right now, like the other night, I played with Nelson Rangel over at Dazzle. And for that gig, I need electronic keyboards for certain sounds. And so I have a Nord little red keyboard that's like a Swiss Army knife, you know, it has great acoustic piano, great Rhodes, clavs, all my bread and butter, B3. Because I'm not going to haul a B3 around like Tom, you know, does. I don't know why he does that.
Come on,
but,
man.
I'm just too old. I've done that, you know. And I have a Yamaha Motif, and I run it through a stereo amp. But that's all morphed. I used to carry around big speakers and a mixer and a rack. I remember I worked with Nelson Rangel on the road quite a bit when he was with GRP back in the 90s. And I would carry two keyboards and a rack and my suitcase through an airport. Oh, I remember it was just like, I remember one time, you know, I was at Washington Dulles or something like that. And I see my keyboard coming down the chute from the luggage thing, you know, it hits the edge of the chute, case pops open, keyboard goes down the floor, the marble floor, it's down the marble floor and it's okay. It still works.
Yeah.
So, but I've got tons of gear, you know, and it's always morphing and I'm always trying to stay up with the latest stuff, you know, the computer. I have a home recording rig here, you know, and I'm most of the people I know have that, you know, now. Because I do tracks out of here that people send me stuff and I'll do tracks and send them via the Ethernet, you know, so.
Wow.
Man, thank you so much, Eric. Just a great conversation, a little insight into all those influences that you mentioned. And yeah, congratulations. It's going to be a really fun night on the 29th.
I'm looking forward to that, yeah.
A lot of old friends. I don't know, last time you were in the Casino Cabaret, the way we used to call it back in the day.
Right, I remember.
Now, yeah. But you have a show coming up, I think, in a week or two over, where is it?
Dazzle, right, on the 15th?
Oh, yes. Really looking forward to that. Yeah.
Nice. What do you guys have on tap?
It's two friends of his from Los Angeles.
Yes, Graham Dechter and Alex Frank, right?
Yes, yeah, and Brian called me about that. We played a gig with the Colorado Jazz Repertory Orchestra, and I'd played a little bit with him before and loved his playing, and, you know, we really hit it off, and he asked me to do the gig, you know, because they were coming into town, and they kind of knew me from some things I had done out there. It's kind of, it's a quartet, some original arrangements, some original tunes. They've got a nice book. I just got the music recently, and I've been looking at it. It's going to be a lot of fun.
One night and one set.
Not only we're going to be on Kuvo, I think, in the afternoon.
Yeah. That day.
And then we're doing a clinic up in, at UNC in Greeley the next day. So I'm really looking forward to that. Yeah, that's going to be fun. But I'll just be an acoustic guy. Acoustic piano. I'll assume that persona that day.
Piano du jour.
Yes, piano du jour, you know.
Whatever they throw at him, he'll play it.
Exactly.
Thank you so much, Eric. It's been so great to chat with you.
Thank you so much for having me. And once again, I'm really honored to be being inducted into the Hall of Fame. It's a real honor to be up there with Kenny and Greg Gisbert, Alan Rucker, Kuvo. Mm-hmm. And the Chapultepec. I mean, I've had long-term relationships with everybody. You know, it's,
yeah.
It's great.
Yeah.
So,
congrats. So, thank you again.
Thanks so much.
All right.